Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Kapp.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Flynn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. This is episode 226 and we are in the year 2020. Still January, early days. It is just me for this stage. Brenton is still off enjoying his holidays. We will hear from him with the interview that follows this update. So I hope everybody's had a good time over the Christmas break, getting back into the swing of things. The news that's coming out of Microsoft isn't enormous as yet. It's beginning to ramp up slowly, so there's not a huge amount of news to cover off, but I do have some items to speak about. The first of these is the new security default. So what Microsoft is doing is enabling you to set a number of standard security defaults, such as disabling basic auth, enabling multi-factor authentication, and doing this through a single policy. Now, we basically manipulate this via our Azure AD environment, and all we need to do is typically turn it off or on. Now, there is a bit of a challenge here if you want some granularity. So the reality is at this stage, there isn't much granularity. So basically when you turn on the security defaults, that's it. The only option you've got is to turn it on. Now, if you already have basically some other policies in there, conditional access, some of those other custom policies, then these are going to conflict with the standard security defaults. Now, the security defaults will be enabled by default on all new tenants going forward. So all new tenants will have this default option set for security defaults when it is spun up. Older tenants, you can go in and enable it yourself, and you'll find that again in Azure AD, or put the article in the show notes so you can go and have a look at it and drill in and have a look at this. But typically it's about disabling basic authentication, enabling MFA, again, protecting the tenant and doing it in a default manner. And obviously Microsoft is doing this to prevent the number of attacks that we do see out there, because a lot of people aren't turning these defaults on by default. So remember that new tenants will have this enabled. You can disable it if you want. Existing tenants can turn this on manually if they want, but if they already have some custom settings, then again, they will conflict and you won't be able to turn these on. And the security defaults, again, are fairly not very granular in what you can control. So have a look at the article, see if that works for you. Keep that in mind going forward for any new tenants. Now, there is also a new management preview for Office. Again, we'll put the article in the show notes so you can go and have a look at this. This is going to give you more granular control over how you roll out Office from Office 365, the apps basically to your environments. Again, this is a good step. We're going to be able to have more control over our environments and the desktop applications based on what our users need. So, not a lot in there, but again, we'll put the article in there so you can go and have a look and review that. Now, one of the most interesting articles that I found was one that said it 8 new ways to empower first-line workers and transform the way they work with Microsoft 365. So this talks about typically the F1 SKU. So this is the frontline worker. This is the worker that typically isn't sitting at a desk behind a keyboard. They're using a mobile device, which is more and more users every day. Now, what really caught my eye in this announcement here is the ability to have a walkie-talkie in Teams. So basically what it's going to mean is that, yes, you can make calls. Obviously, within Teams, you can have meetings. You can do all that on a mobile device. But this concept of a walkie-talkie, I think, is good in, you know, certain circumstances. It's a lot of people would use this, especially a lot of basic frontline workers, maybe out in a warehouse or, again, in a stock-type area. Again, it's just basically a push-to-talk experience. We can get different people involved in it as well. We can have different participants, so events, things like that. it would work really well. So again, it's basically an ability that's rolling out to the mobile app for iOS and Android. So again, go and have a look at that. Make sure you've got the latest app installed on your devices and go and see what this can do. Again, one of the other interesting ones in this article was the ability to sign up your frontline workers with a pure SMS login. So again, the idea here is that you can log in basically using a phone number. You put in the phone number as your sign in, and then you'll be SMS'd a code to enter to verify. So again, it's worthwhile having a look at this article, see how Microsoft's moving to enable first line workers, what's possible, and I think a lot of that is simplified for those users to make it easier to get them on board and up and working. Now, remember that the first line worker experience generally is aimed at a mobile user who's not sitting at a desk and typically doesn't include things like the desktop apps, has a smaller mailbox and whatever. So again, the advantage of that is it's cheaper and gives you the same sort of flexibility protection as you would expect. But again, it's aimed at users who typically aren't using a desktop in their day-to-day environment. Now, another one here is the announcement of Office Script. So we've sort of had Visual Basic available in our apps on our desktop for quite a while, but the compatibility with that on the web has suffered. So we can't run a lot of the macros that we created with Visual Basic in the web. So the solution to this is this new Office Scripts. So that will allow you basically to run the JavaScript style environment quickly and easily inside your code, and that will mean inside your application, which will then mean that it can run on the web as well. So the web version will work as well. So again, it's still in preview in beta, but if you are someone who goes in and does a lot of automation in your Office apps, certainly something worth looking. Now, the way that we enable this basically is go into the Admin Center in Microsoft 365. We go into Settings and then Settings again, and we'll find an option in there called Office Scripts, and all we need to do is enable. Now, the last one that I have for you is an update of Microsoft Online Services terms are available to Microsoft customers around the world. So there's a blog post here. You can go in and look at the new Microsoft Online Service terms. Recommend that you do that if you're looking at the products. So I'll make sure that the link to that is in the show notes so that you can go and have a look at that. So really, like I said, we're still in early 2020. We're still spinning up. People are still coming back from work. I thank everybody who is listening along. Hopefully you've got value from previous episodes. Again, we basically have now a longer interview style podcast like this episode, and then I have the shorter FAQs around 20 odd minutes where we deep dive into a particular technology. Now, if you do have any suggestions or questions, you can reach us at N2K Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. So that's the number two, so N2K Podcast. You can also send an email to feedback@need2know.cloud. So that's need2know.cloud. Okay. And also you'll find information about previous podcasts at podcast.need2know.cloud. And you can contact Brenton at contactbrenton on the Twitter and me at directorcia also on the Twitter. So again, I thank everybody for listening. Hopefully you are looking forward to a great 2020, and we're looking forward to bringing you lots and lots of information on the Need to Know podcast. But with that, why don't we get into this episode's interview.
Hello, everybody. I'm here with Michelle from Ost Cyber. So I met Michelle at the cybersecurity conference that I was speaking at, and I was really, really impressed with her clarity and the way that she communicates around cybersecurity, and the sort of like the organization was something a little bit fun and different. And I really liked that about it, because I think you can get a lot of sort of men in suits in cybersecurity and a lot of like paranoid people who are very, very concerned. But it's sort of good to have this sort of fresh messaging around cybersecurity. So I said to Michelle, you seem this like the sort of person I would like on our podcast. And she was happy to oblige. So welcome, Michelle.
Thanks, Brenton. And hi, everyone. Great to be with you.
It's good to have you here. So I want to get started and say that you guys are actually a small business yourself, you were saying.
We sure are. So AustCyber, the Australian Cybersecurity Growth Network, we are funded by government, and we're actually funded mostly by the federal government, but also a little bit by the states and territories as well, but fully publicly funded. But we're a private entity that is a non-profit, and we are funded to have around about 12 to 14 people, depending on our projects that we've got on. So absolutely fill the definition of a small business. We fit under the Corporations Act like everybody else does. So I spend my days doing the BAS statement just like everybody else does, at the same time as delivering on the key mission of AustCyber, which is to grow an Australian cybersecurity sector.
That's great to hear. And you know, we're an Office 365 podcast. So are you an Office 365 customer?
Indeed we are. We have been almost natively, not quite, but almost natively Office 365. And we're just in the process actually of seeing through the final stages of implementing Dynamics 365 as well, actually, having spent almost 3 years, which is the 3 years that AustCyber's been around, really kind of testing out the different products in the market that do what Dynamics does, and being a happy customer of that now too.
It's pretty unusual to hear of a business of your size being on Dynamics. What was it that got you over the line with Dynamics?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously having the context of us coming about is about cybersecurity. And so our job being to grow the sector for the country, so kind of, you know, letting that sink in for a moment, growing a brand new sector, a very big mission for a very small organisation comparatively. What pushed us towards Dynamics really was, of course, the integrations that you can get with Office 365, as well as the workflows that are available within Dynamics. So as much as it's really sort of established and structured for very large organisations, as a very small organisation that is dealing with hundreds, if not thousands, of stakeholders every week, we needed something that could take the volume of activity in our stakeholder group, which is global, as well as being able to manage the security requirements that we have, because of course, you know, much like everyone else, we are a target for malicious cyber activity, but actually in some cases more so because we're very, very visible in flying the Australian flag when it comes to sovereign capability. And so some of the things that we say mean that we might become a target, but also because we are a body that has government money, and part of that government money is about providing grants through our projects fund, we're just as exposed as everyone else. And so the security requirements and the ease at which those security requirements within the Office and Dynamics 365 environment operate, together with all of the other different components of our security architecture, we found to actually be far more effective than some of the other things that we've had in play over the past 3 years.
Yeah, I think that's the big sell of Microsoft at the moment, that, you know, you can put it all in the same bucket. You can put it all behind a single identity. It's fairly safe there. You have that control and that customization as well. You can have the reporting, you can have everything click into it that you need to do your job, and you don't have to go and procure half a dozen or a dozen cloud applications. Is, you know, what I'm seeing out in the industry is still a lot of that in small business, where you go and get 12 cloud applications, but six of them are not really doing very good on security, you know. So you go with the big Microsoft, and they take care of all of that for you, to the most part. Is that really distilling that cybersecurity posture that you're trying to push?
Absolutely. And I think that to sort of take that one step further, I think for organisations and people listening to this, it's really important that, you know, they understand that, you know, one of the things that I really liked as a CEO coming with, and I also sit on not only my own board, but a series of other boards, those responsibilities that we have, from a fiduciary and prudential perspective, is that as much as the Microsoft environment does kind of provide a single pane of view around that, or a glass pane, if you like, as we say, it's also highly adaptable to other different requirements that you might have, which for me was a requirement because, of course, with our job being to grow an Australian cybersecurity sector, we're championing the development of capability that's coming out of startups and scale-ups. And so to be able to have an organisation that's global like Microsoft, so not sovereign Australian company, but one that truly understands the local environment and why small business are a really important part of the supply chain and value chain environment, to be able to adapt to some of those requirements that we might have. And so AustCyber very proudly is a customer of a series of the Australian cybersecurity companies that we are here to support to grow. And that, you know, there's kind of from a security architecture point of view, but also a business strategy perspective, integration that's available with those products and services as well. So it's not about tossing out what is useful to you. It's about tossing out what's ineffective to you from a security point of view and being able to integrate what is effective for you and be able to adapt to your preferences in terms of products and services. I really like that about the 365 environment.
Yeah, and to be able to just click stuff in now, whereas you used to need a team of developers and stuff to get integrations going, Microsoft's building a lot of that for you. So you can just go around and just say, okay, well, I need a Marketo integration. Oh, look, there's one there that works most of the time. There's some developer behind it supporting it. Whereas in the old days, you'd sort of, you know, you get someone to hack something up in PHP and then it gets pwned not that long afterwards because, you know, no one's really looking at it. So anyway,
you then have to try and sustain it. You know, when you have if you've got your patch management happening well, and then you've got it, you know, if you've forgotten that you've switched off something over here and then you've switched on something over there, trying to sustain that kind of bespoke activity within your organization is incredibly challenging. Microsoft erases all of that. And that's at the end of the day why I think that the environment is a good one, because it does remove a lot of the need for small business to focus on the detail around how things work. But with the transparency of being able to understand what those decisions are doing to your risk posture, but also your business strategy. Because really, when we think about it, security is an enabler. It needs to be looked at from that perspective. We need to make sure that, particularly for small business, which comprises 97% of the Australian economy, we need to look at how we make it easier from a security point of view in that enabling of business growth. If companies aren't growing and doing that in a cyber resilient way, then actually the Australian economy globally starts to fall behind. And so I'm quite passionate about making sure that small business nationally appreciates that, you know, the message of building locally and delivering globally is a really important one, even if you never export anything, even if you are a franchise that's providing, coffee in locations around the country. It's just as important for you to be thinking about what the global context is now as what it is about your local delivery, and that cyber has a really, really important role in that. Making sure that your security posture is looked after from that business perspective is increasingly important, and the 365 environment helps make that easier.
Yeah, and it's it was interesting talking around the cybersecurity conference, and I was doing a small business talk, and people were rushing up afterwards, like, "Oh, we've got all these small businesses we work with. They're Yahoos. They don't understand cybersecurity. You know, the marketing department really wants to work with them because they're the only people who can do it. But you know, we try and have a cybersecurity conversation with them, and they don't know what we're talking about, and they just say, 'No, we can't do that.'" And it's like, no, we really, really need you to follow, you know, if we're going to give you the Facebook account, we really need you to like use two-factor authentication and stuff like that. And they're like, how do we have that conversation? How do we say, you know, we want to be able to work with you as best we can. We don't want to put a lot of bureaucracy in, but we also need you to treat our business with respect, because we do a lot of cybersecurity and we spend a lot of money, but, you know, one weak link, and a lot of that money is not necessarily for nothing, but, you know, if you just got weak links in the chain, then you're better off spending it there, you know? So that sort of brings me on my next question around this whole phenomenon of small business cybersecurity. It's been a really new thing, and we've had Korch on the podcast before talking about cybersecurity, and the way he talks about cybersecurity is so different to the way that I see anyone else speak about cybersecurity in small business. There's a few like really good cybersecurity consultants that I've met that have come down to small business, and they seem to talk a different language. So could you explain why that is? Do you have any idea why this is, Michelle?
Yeah, I think that, well, in my humble opinion, I think it's because the way that information security has evolved into a broader context of cybersecurity, that history is actually quite important context. And information security, so thinking about the fact that that means the security of information, was born out of the military environment. And militaries are very large organisations. There is nothing small about a military, even if they are from a small nation, or if you think about a non-formal or an informal form of a military like a militia, there's still a lot of hierarchy and organisation that goes on around a military being effective. And so when you're talking about the security of information, that's a very different context to when you then come to today, where cybersecurity, which is around, at the end of the day, it's actually about making sure that the security of our digital assets and digital information is robust and resilient. It's a much, much broader context. It does, in fact, impact everyone. And so I think that it's taken us time, which is natural because we're humans and we're not particularly quick to change our behaviours. It used to just be the domain of government in terms of that military home and national security. But then as governments started to figure out that for a whole range of different reasons, that it couldn't solve the challenges involved in InfoSec and then now cybersecurity by itself, and it started to open up its problem sets to industry, the first people that it went to have conversations with were large technology providers. And that's, again, natural in the evolution of any particular topic that we look at around the world. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, sort of climate change, another topical thing right now, or it's something as traditional as agriculture. We see that the natural trusted evolution in that is for government to reach out to the larger players within an economy. Fast forward to now, we appreciate the fact that, of course, the engine of most economies around the world is small business. It's not just Australia. The overwhelming majority of most economies in the world is small business. And in fact, when you look at our part of the world, it's not even small business that drives the economies of some of our near neighbours. It's micro businesses in countries like Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, Philippines, etc. And so that's why I think it's taken security professionals a little bit of time to catch up with how you actually frame the conversation with small business and why it is different to an enterprise in inverted, in the air quotes of enterprise. And a lot of the products that we've seen come out that, you know, are trying to adapt themselves to small business contexts have really, really struggled to think through the difference between needing to have an enterprise type business strategy. You've still got to take account of everything. Doesn't matter if you're a micro business or you're a large business, you've still got to provide the same kind of reporting to the ATO. You've still got to provide assurances back to your investors, which could be the bank, on your second mortgage and all of that kind of stuff, that you're going to be able to pay your bills. All of that kind of stuff is the same. It's just the quantum that's different. So it's not actually enough to just switch off features in the enterprise products to achieve the same outcome, in essence, from a different context perspective for security. And we're just starting to figure that out. But it really does take people like Korch and me and others who have were born in small business and that their security lives started in small business to provide that education uplift to our colleagues in the industry who have only ever worked in enterprise level security challenges, to be able to distill what this means today for a small business. And that small business is highly contextual. A small business in retail, while at the financial level has very similar requirements on it, a small business within defence industry has very, very different regulatory considerations and so will have different security requirements as well. What's baseline in all of that is that we do need to figure out what our crown jewels are. And the crown jewels no longer stop at the physical boundaries of our businesses. They go well beyond now. There is no longer a physical fence around our organisations. We're all part of global value chains and global supply chains, whether or not that's a tangible thing or not. You know, we all rely on the internet, for example, as a digital asset in how we run our businesses now. And, you know, when the internet goes down, whoever the provider might be, it burns and it costs business money. If we're not protecting that from a security point of view, if it went down because it was a security intrusion, and how do you know whether or not it was a security intrusion as opposed to just someone having, you know, the backhoe's gone into the cable down the street, you know, that's really important from an investment point of view as to where you're putting your dollars, which for small business is really challenging to make that prioritised decision about where you're spending your dollars. You know, those considerations are real for small business in the same way that they are real for large business.
Yeah, I'd love to pick up on that piece that you said there around enterprise. It's not about getting an enterprise product and then taking features out and then selling it at a reduced price. We had the product manager of Microsoft on the podcast, Microsoft 365 Business, which is their small business version of their premiums product. And she was saying, you know, we're trying really, really hard to listen and not just give you a scaled down version of the enterprise product, because we know we could probably give you E5 slightly cheaper, but a lot of stuff in E5 isn't all that relevant to small business, but some stuff is. So we want to give you that. We want to give you Azure Information Protection. We want to give you some of these other features, conditional access, et cetera. But we need to do it in a sensible way that makes sense for small business. And I think this is what is really waking up. And even Microsoft being a very, very good at enterprise, it's still trying to figure out, well, okay, we're working with these IT providers and they're looking after 50 customers, and how are they going to manage 50 Office 365 tenants? You know, these are the sorts of challenges that they're hearing, and they're working pretty hard. I think a lot of the vendors are working very hard to try and figure out how to solve those problems for us, because, you know, there's no IT department at Aus Cyber, is there? It all falls on you, and you no doubt leverage a lot of external providers, and you've got to put trust in them to make sure that A, they know what they're doing, and B, that, you know, they're secure themselves.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is getting more important, but also more challenging to be able to prove that or assure that trust that you place in your external providers. It's not enough anymore to have the right kind of clauses in your contract or your service agreement. So absolutely, you know, I publicly call out, you know, I am known for calling out individual companies and brands who are doing a great job of being able to adapt to the small business environment. Now, yes, at the end of the day, there is a commercial drive and incentive for them to do so. But hey, at the end of the day, when those very large multinational organizations have their mind in the right place, I actually don't kind of care so much where their heart is. It requires them to focus more and more on the local requirements of each market. And they, you know, Microsoft has invested heavily in placing teams in market and recruiting from within market to understand the context and the needs of local organisations to be able to do that build and be able to do that adaptation. If the mind is right, actually, of course, the heart comes with it. And so what that means is that, you know, again, from a partnership point of view, being able to provide that assurance at the end of the day, which underpins the trust that you might have with your different sets of providers, means that it's a much more productive relationship that you might have with your MSP or your MSSP when you've got that happening within an environment like the Microsoft environment, because you can already tick the box and know that there's lots of assurances in play globally. There's lots of checks and balances to make sure they keep iterating on that. And I think what's great about the Microsoft environment is that they are also getting iteratively better at being able to communicate and, better still, co-design the changes that they're making within the environment with small businesses across different sectors and contexts. Because ultimately what that means is that everyone benefits from being able to drive a bigger commercial outcome. Now, in the context of government, particularly if you're also a private sector entity that works with government, there are also benefits in that because it provides assurance in the information exchange that you might have. You'll be able to better trust how you share information and the integrity of that information between those different contexts. You know, we've obviously had some conversations in Australia about whether or not Australian residents and citizens can trust their data with government, and, you know, sort of, you know, the conversation usually picks on human services. Human services does a huge amount of work to work with organisations like Microsoft to help improve the conversation with private individuals as well as with organisations who operate in that environment. So really great example, actually. And, you know, of course, you know, the tall poppy syndrome still running rife in Australia. Why are we sort of championing Microsoft here? There is a reality here that says at the end of the day, we need to align ourselves with those who are on the right side of the equation. And absolutely, cyber criminals are on the wrong side of the equation. And statistically within Australia right now, that if you are compromised as opposed to breached, you've been broken into, nothing taken that you can figure out that's been taken, compromised, you've had stuff taken or stuff has been manipulated. If you have been compromised, the average time to expiration, the average time to your business ending is 6 months. Now, when we're 97% fueled in the economy by small business, it is imperative that organisations like Microsoft are doubling down on that innovation and that iteration around the security environment that it provides through supply chains and value chains. And obviously I've got my mum voice on here because I do think it's really important that businesses, particularly when they are small business, don't have to constantly check in on whether or not that assurance is trustworthy, whether or not all of the features are the right features that they've just signed up to, because they don't have the time to understand the technical depth of whether or not this feature versus that feature is the right one for their business context. They've got a relationship with their providers. It's a trusted relationship, whether it's through the MSP or directly with, you know, with Microsoft itself. It's all transparent and it's robust, and you can have challenging conversations at the same time as very positive conversations. Those things are really important and will become more and more important as we see the flow down effect in the global economy of things like the info wars, deep fakes, you know, information manipulation, including in through things like elections. This will have a trickle down effect for small business. Now, that might sound scary. In my view, if you're working within an within an environment like the Microsoft environment, it means that you've already got a really great place to be able to grow from in using the opportunity side of what sounds quite scary. If you're the organization in your local ecosystem, in your local kind of market, if you're the trusted provider, if you're the trusted partner, you're the trusted brand, because you're able to demonstrate how cyber resilient you are today, even if you're at the start of your journey. By being transparent about that, that's not disclosing stuff to the bad guys. That's demonstrating to the market that you've got confidence that you're on the right path. You will attract more customers, you will retain more staff, and our economy will grow. So these things are very serious considerations for small business, particularly when it comes to then paying for that. But actually, there's lots of double benefits that come from being able to see security as an investment when there's a flow through, when there's a pull through, in being able to see how that has benefits for your workflows, if you're using Dynamics, when you've got the sort of assimilation in the 365 environment between, you know, areas like Word and Excel and Outlook and all of that kind of stuff. It makes it more streamlined. It's not necessarily easy in the beginning. We've certainly gone through the process of providing the uplift around onboarding Dynamics. It's not painful, it just takes time. But we've decided that it's a positive investment of time as well as the investment of money, because we can see the rewards that are laying out before us.
Yeah, and I think that's what it's about at the end of the day. And, you know, I think this, the main thing of what you're telling me is that small business really needs to start thinking about security as an investment. And I'd love to see on tender documents where they go, what's your Office 365 security score? Not necessarily to name or shame people, but to prompt people and go, oh, what is that? And they go in there because the global average is about 30 and it should be about 200. By the time you turn on two-factor authentication for your admins, that gives you 50. Two-factor authentication for all your staff, then you're already up to 70. Plus you get a whole bunch, like fewer than five global admins, a few other things that you get out of the box for basically free. There's really no excuse it should be under 100, but the global average is only about 30 for most small businesses, because no one's ever gone in there and had a look and turned any of the stuff on. And that, I suppose that's the big challenge that we're trying to solve on the podcast is, I'm guess it's not the podcast listeners, because they're taking the time to invest in themselves and learn about the intricacies of all of this and how do we help customers go on that journey and get more secure. But then there's also this other side of it of, you know, how do we educate the whole industry? How do we bring the whole industry up so that we're actually having a mature conversation about cybersecurity? Have you got any like quick tips that you could, you know, how do you think we could go about elevating the cybersecurity across the board from an industry perspective?
So the quick tips there are that, you know, there's a fair bit of work going on behind the scenes, not necessarily, like, not particularly visible right now around, I guess, advocating. I'm a very strong voice in this, as you can probably imagine, Brenton, that, you know, I think that we need, for a small business, you know, there's only a couple of really trusted people within the management of a small business. There's often an accountant involved. And not that's you know, when you've gone above about five people, because actually even accountants are not necessarily part of the picture if you're a micro business. There could be a business advisor, and keep in mind that the business advisor could be a mentor. So the mentor could be a mum or a dad or, you know, a best friend. And there's usually, you know, some kind of trusted source of advice, which again is often different parts of the internet. So it could be the resources that are becoming increasingly accessible in terms of the information, being able to read it quickly and absorb it quickly on the ATO's website, for example. So it's doubling down on those channels as a form of communication and awareness raising for small business, doing it in bite sizes. We're all starting to figure out what the benefits of podcasts are. At the end of the day, we still haven't figured out as humans yet, and maybe autonomous vehicles won't even solve this, of how we actually be productive digitally when we're on the move. And so we are listening to podcasts, for example, but it still comes down to the people that are around us who we trust. And one of the best mechanisms that we can do collectively for listeners is to actually just generate a conversation around the dinner table, whether that dinner table is with your family, because it's just as important for your kids to be digitally secure as it is for you in your business. That generates some great behaviours that have generational impact, but actually also your mates, you know, whether you're you have the barbecue, it's the weather's warming up, doesn't matter what your gender is. We most of us get involved in barbecues, and if it's not a barbecue in the backyard, it's a barbecue in a restaurant. You know, it's actually being confident enough to say, hey, what are you guys doing on cybersecurity in your organization? And did you know that it's actually a growth mechanism, whatever language you choose to use? It is actually about growth at the end of the day, because you can't grow as a business if your business has been ended because you didn't get the security journey right. And it's a journey. There is no silver bullet here. So having an average score of 30 is better than zero. But let's try and make sure that we are starting to say, actually, two-factor authentication, that's a very technical, jargonistic phrase. What does it mean? It just means two pieces of form of identity. So let's go for multi-factor. Let's get different factors in there so that somebody can't use my voice or my face or my fingerprint as the only thing to get into my stuff. It's as simple as that. Now, translating that into action is a little bit different because, yes, it does take time, but bringing that back into the Microsoft environment, what I would say is, as a small business, I put my hand on my heart and say the first conversation was 1 hour. The second conversation was 2 hours. And then the first step to implementation was us as a team giving ourselves permission to take half a day out to invest in our future. And so that has a return on that investment, both in terms of productivity as well as dollars, because when things go wrong, the productivity is the first thing that dives. We can't do anything else if there's been a security issue or if things haven't been configured right. So half a day we took off and we, you know, took out from our day to day and made sure that we were all on the same page in terms of why we were doing what it is and what the key things are to go forward in terms of company behaviours. And boom, there has been more in terms of the implementation, but that's then being done by a smaller set of people. And the behaviours across the company have dramatically improved when it comes to our security posture as a result. And so while, yes, absolutely, today I could be compromised, my business could be compromised, I know that I can provide assurances to my board and to my broader masters that we've done what we can right now to provide that uplift and provide that knowledge sharing within the company that's actually quite straightforward. It's not in jargon, it's all in plain English, to understand why taking that extra 2 seconds to switch on your 2FA around your two-factor authentication on your mobile app, because it's already been switched on for you on your laptop, is going to make sure that collectively we've just given ourselves an immunization against ransomware. Boom.
Yep.
Job done.
So yeah, I think that getting back to that why, I think, is what you're saying, that people get told you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do that, and they see it as pointless compliance nonsense, makes their life more difficult, that gets in the way of the work that they need to be done. But if you take a bit of a different approach and go, no, this is why we're doing this, this is why it's important, and get everybody on the same board, on board with it, I think that's what we really need to do better, because at the moment, customers aren't really asking for cybersecurity in small business. You might have a different experience of it, but in my experience, customers only ask when something happens or they see something on the telly. So this law firm got hacked on the telly. Now I'm very worried. I need to do something about security today. I'm like, that's not how it works. It needs to be sort of an ongoing thing. I think the industry would naturally rise if customers came to us and said, you know, security is really important to us. Here's what we need you to achieve. Here's our ideal state, et cetera, et cetera. Whether it's a number, whether it's a secure score number, I want to get to 200. I don't care how you get there because I'm not an IT person. How do we empower customers with those sorts of easy to use things that they can go to their provider and go, security is really important to me. Here's how I have that conversation. Here's how we set some goals and objectives around that. Here's how you set a budget around that, because they just think it's IT budget, not a cybersecurity budget. How do we get customers on the demand side to really change the way that they approach us?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. And it's interesting that you ask it, because it's becoming quite frequent now in terms of being asked that. I think that if we assume for a moment that because they've seen something on the TV or they've heard something on radio or they've heard something on a podcast, there's kind of been that lightning bolt moment where it's like, oh God, this could actually happen to me. It could happen to my company, and it could happen to my people, my staff and my family. Because certainly if you're a CEO of an organisation, we're seeing increasing trends around it not being about your staff, but being about your family as a means to get to you. That's obviously quite terrifying. Whatever the motivation for you to become interested in the topic and ask some more questions. And so the very first thing is to actually not go straight to your IT provider. Or to, if you already have a relationship with a set of security providers, to go straight to them. It's actually to go to your organisation. It's to go to your team and just sort of say, hey, how do we do things around here today? Because even though if you're a manager or you're the CEO or you're just, you're a grad or you're just you're the newest person in the company, when was the last time that everyone had a collective conversation? Because if you're a small business, we're all running all the time. But when was the last time that you took 5 minutes to have a collective conversation to say, hey, even though I asked you to do this, are we doing it? And if we're not doing it, hey, it's okay, but why aren't we doing it? Because that then starts to lay out the different kinds of topics that you need to cover with your MSP or to go to your account manager if you're a bit bigger and you have one with Microsoft, et cetera, so that you can start the conversation from a more informed place, I guess. Because, if you're just like, I've seen the sky fall for this law firm on TV, this could happen to me, what do I do? That's actually not providing the context to the security professionals in which you work. So it's much better to be able to say, okay, team, what are we doing on this today? And it's okay if the team says, well, actually, we don't think we're doing anything. That's when you get your business plan out, and the business plan can be something on the back of an envelope. It might not even be written down. Get it written down. Provide some context around what your why is. Why do you exist as an organisation? Has that been designed for you because you're part of a franchise or because you are responding to something that you saw or experienced in your market? All of that kind of stuff. What's your why? And how could people erode that by compromising you through cyber means? Then go to your providers or your potential providers and say, hey, this is us. What do we need to improve, or where do we need to start? And that's really the very first place to start. If you're more further along than that, then you can go to, you can probably already skip over that because you've got a relationship with, say, your accountant or your law firm or whoever it might be, who's already got that context for you and say, hey, we need to step up on our cybersecurity. we wanted to sort of figure out how much we need to spend. I really want to try and integrate it into our business strategy. So it's actually part of our growth strategy. We're going to invest in it. We're not seeing it as a cost, because actually, if we see it as a cost, it's just going to get squirreled away. It'll be the first thing that disappears when things get hard for us financially. This is a priority for our organisation, because actually it's black and white now. If we don't have this in play, we might not exist next year. So let's kind of get going on this, and let's give ourselves permission to know that it won't get all done this week. It's probably going to take us a couple of years, but let's do it iteratively, and we're going to get some help from some trusted people to be able to help us on that journey. And my goodness gracious, there's so many, there's a lot of really good trusted organisations out there that can provide that kind of initial advice. And hats off to Microsoft for being one of those organisations, because it has invested, as I said earlier, in their teams on the ground in Australia who are Australians and understand how our economy works, what the pressures are. And they themselves may have even worked in small business at some point in their careers and are drawing on that knowledge to try and provide, you know, try and relate to your context and provide empathy for what you're suddenly going through. And hopefully you're doing it proactively, you're not doing it reactively to an event that you think has happened or somebody else has told you has happened to your organisation, because I can assure everyone, it is far cheaper for you to be doing this proactively than to be doing it reactively, because stuff has hit the fan and you have been breached or you have been compromised.
Yeah, and certainly that conversation with your team, really like that idea, because you know, the worst thing people can come to me and say is, and they'll go, oh, I want to do something in cybersecurity. Okay, what's really important to you? What information do you store on that's valuable to someone? Oh, we don't know. We don't know. Well, do you have personally identifiable information? Oh, we have like driver's licenses, maybe a few thousand of them in email and stuff, and we don't have Office 365 yet, so it just sits out on GoDaddy server somewhere, and they keep sending us emails telling it's not secure, but we don't know what to do. And, you know, so that they don't really know what's where the valuable information is. But for most small businesses, I find it's it sits in their file server, it sits in their email, and they probably have an app on a server somewhere, or apps in the cloud where most of their crown jewels sit. And then other things are probably less critical. So if they have a email newsletter list with a couple of hundred people on it, I'm probably not going to spend the same resources trying to secure that as I would running around trying to, you know, find all these driver's licenses sitting in an email inbox in the middle of nowhere. So I think that's how, is that how you would have that conversation, Michelle?
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of that's kind of the part B in the same conversation as the part A, just kind of taking the opportunity, using cyber and cybersecurity as the opportunity to say, goodness gracious, might use other language. We've really kind of digitized ourselves. You know, we're using a lot of technology now, whether that be through Xero, which by the way is an awesome organization as well with great integrations in the Microsoft environment. We're using Xero now. We didn't even kind of realize or recognize that that's actually a, you know, it's a software platform. And we're investing a huge amount of trust in them. We're just trusting that they secure all of our data that's sitting in there. You know, so let's do a check-in on, you know, where what our position is as an organisation. How much do we care about this? That's the part A. It's kind of doing the hearts piece. Because, you know, digital transformation, as the buzzwords are now, you know, that's a sort of quite tired phrase now. But actually, it is digital transformation. You are using digital technologies to be able to get more efficient, be able to drive greater revenue and greater margins. You know, how much do we care about that? Well, of course, we care a lot about it. So, wow, we've actually onboarded a whole series of bits of technology, bits of software along the way here. And for some, particularly in the startup environment, when you're still in that very early stage of life as a company, that can happen in the blink of an eye. And so, you know, do we have a list somewhere? No, we don't. Well, let's kind of go through, I mean, then sort of stepping into this part B of the conversation, let's just quickly go through where all of this sits and what kind of information sits there and how much do we care about it, that information? Because actually, hey, look, while we're doing this from a security point of view, we can see that we've not really been using the 365 environment to the best that we probably could, because there's some efficiencies here from a workflow perspective that we haven't switched on as people. We're not using it collectively as people. And then by the end of that conversation, whether it's a half hour conversation or it's a half day conversation, you're going to have some documented information there. Documenting is as simple as writing it down. So absolutely. And by the end of it, you've got both the hearts and minds. Now, not everyone will necessarily be on board with that, but this is where leadership is really important. And leadership doesn't have to just sit within the CEO or the managing director of the organisation. It sits in whoever anyone is willing to take the care factor a step up. They're providing leadership by saying, we do need to care about this stuff. This is about the future of our organisation. And if the organisation doesn't exist, then we don't have jobs. And we can't get done what this company was set up to do. It doesn't have to be about the CEO, but actually really it is, in my experience, really important for the CEO and the senior leadership, even if the senior leadership is still vested in the CEO, because it's a micro organisation, to see the benefits of caring about this stuff. And so, you know, by the end of that conversation, you'll have some sense of hearts and minds, and you'll know also from a cultural point of view what in the future you're going to have to start working on with some of your staff in terms of the behaviours. There already will be some flags in that conversation that you can look at as part of any kind of uplift that you'll then start to do over successive weeks, months and years. So there's a lot that you can achieve when you've got your mindset to it in that initial conversation.
Yeah, no, that's really good, Michelle. We probably should wrap it up. I think it's just reflecting on a lot of the stuff that we've spoken about. I think there's a lot of value in presenting cybersecurity not as your doom and gloom, but hey, there's a growth opportunity here. Cybersecurity is an investment in your company. It makes your company better. It reduces your risk, but it also makes you more attractive to other companies that you work with. And it makes everything a lot easier. So I really like that messaging around, it's not just something you have to spend money on because such and such said you had to go buy this product because such and such had to. So I think that's one that we could all get better at talking about in our businesses or, in our organizations around that, and particularly talking around the Microsoft story as well. There was one other thing around that that whole we're all in the same boat as well. So I think we all need to be a little bit more collaborative as well, as what you're saying is if we can all work together and we can go back to our teams and we can have a conversation internally about cybersecurity and we can work back from that, and then we can talk to other people in our industry or people at a barbecue or at a restaurant and get a bit of a feel for what they're doing and what we should be doing, that those conversations probably need to be had more often. And it's not something I hear a lot when I listen to all of these things. So those things have been particularly interesting at all. Is there any final thoughts you would like to leave us with?
Yeah, I think that, once you kind of get the bug, I'm not expecting that all listeners will have as much passion by the time they sort of move on from the world about cyber as what you and I do, Brenton. But certainly, as you start to get the bug, you'll find that actually it's a really interesting environment. Cybersecurity is the gift that keeps on giving, but it's the gift that keeps on giving from a knowledge uplift perspective. It is a very dynamic environment as well as being complex. There's lots of really interesting issues that occur within the cyber environment. And of course, the jargon is that we are actually now living in a cyber physical world. It means that the digital is very, very entwined and integrated with the physical world. We can't separate the two anymore. And in fact, your mum would have said to you, or your dad would have said to you, that you should never say never, but we can confidently say we will never see a time where you see the digital separated from the physical anymore. And so, once you get the bug of cyber being a thing, whether you kind of care about it in your heart of hearts as much as I do and as much as Brenton does, I think there's a wealth of information available and, where you can start to incrementally unfold and look at the different kinds of opportunities that exist when you can have a more sophisticated conversation about the cyber environment. So I'll put in a plug for OstCyber here. We've got a huge amount of information on our website, www.ostcyber.com. We work with a huge range of organisations across the economy, including Microsoft and all of the Microsoft partners, to try and continuously provide that economic opportunity aspect to cyber. And truly, it is a situation where really, by being a cyber resilient organisation, your growth opportunities are only limited by your imagination. Now, you could say that I might say that. It's actually true. If you don't believe me, challenge me. Sense check it, see whether or not I'm right, and certainly just jump in. There's nothing that's wrong in this environment. Just jumping in, you're already winning those points and getting past the average of 30 in your score and getting up to, this is where we love the spirit of competition as Australians. Use it as a sport. It is a team sport. It's actually hugely rewarding once you start to see just how many benefits come from integrating cyber into the way you do things around here. So jump onto the OstCyber website. We're happy to answer any questions, and colleagues at Microsoft, I know, would be happy to answer questions too. OstCyber being publicly funded, we're here at your leisure. Your taxpayers' dollars fund us to exist, and we're very grateful for that, to be able to help grow a great Australian cybersecurity sector.
Yeah, we're all paying for it, so we may as well jump on your website and have a look around, grab those resources. Say we wanted to reach you on Twitter or however you like to be contacted, how would someone reach out to you?
So yes, absolutely. If you're on the socials, a very, or just like podcasts, a very efficient means of being able to get across information, you'll find us at the Australian Cybersecurity Growth Network on LinkedIn and on Twitter. It's just at Aust, A-U-S-T, cyber, all one word, at Aust cyber. And we are prolific users of social media. There's a huge amount of information that we share through social media. And we've also got our mascot, which is Cyberoo. And Cyberoo has her own Twitter account, which is cyber_roo. Yes, our mascot is a kangaroo, and she does huge amounts of work internationally and with students who are looking at a career in cyber. She's got a huge global following, so she's also got lots of information to share as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go back to work now. I suppose 5 o'clock is probably time to go home. Thank you for everyone who was listening. If you want to send through any questions or anything that, do send them through to OstCyber. As Michelle said, they're there for you. We really do want to really engage with small businesses. It's like you said, it's not all about the enterprise in security anymore. We're very, very interested in hearing about, and I love getting reached out to on the podcast around what you guys are doing, what insights you're having, how do we make this place better. Slightly better today as it was yesterday. So thank you very much for being on the podcast and being part of that, Michelle. And I'm going to let you sign out right now.
Thanks so much, Brenton. See you.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.